Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us.
Hi, Sophia. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am a writer. I live in Los Angeles. I just wrote a book that is coming out July 13th called Well, This is Exhausting. And it's a series of like humorous essays. It's kind of like a memoir. I also am a sex and relationships columnist for GQ. And I have a newsletter, an advice newsletter called Here's the Thing, where I try to make everyone ask their crush out, or like, I try to get everyone together. I'm like, come on, let's get together.
So how do you get in this line of business, you know, sex and relationship, and you know,
I've been asked this question by a couple people, and I think that my answer of how I like got started on this is that as a kid and a teenager and then growing up, I was just always horny, and so I was always thinking about sex and reading about sex, and then it turned into writing about it. Like, that was something I felt like I could write about with authority. Like, I listen and pay attention to politics, but I never felt like I could have like these fully formed opinions of my own. Now I do. But at the time I was like, what are things that I like care about and have opinions on? And it was like sex and relationships. So yeah, I think I just was kind of opinionated.
I love this. And so what is the most surprising thing that people, you know, will ask you? Like, they're probably going to think of like, are you Carrie Bradshaw? You know, like, you know, that's probably going to be like, you know, but is there anything surprising about it?
I feel like, well, sometimes I have people that I know that write into my advice column and I know them and I'm like, it's fine with me. Like, they often ask me beforehand, but I'm also like, I can just tell you what I think because I talk all the time. Like, I'm not shy. I mean, like, you can just talk to me. But so I think sometimes that's surprising. And then sometimes it's surprising when people in your real life read your work or listen to your work or whatever. And then they comment on it and you're like, oh, I forgot that I like put this thing out there for like, in my mind, I'm like, oh, strangers will hear this. But then it's like, your boss is like, hey, I saw that thing that you talked about. And I'm like, ooh, you know?
Oh my gosh. And I can imagine now with the book, like coming out, it's like, you know, essays is like, gonna be like more nerve wracking because you put yourself out there, you know, it's not fiction. It's like, you know, there's memoir, you know?
Yeah. And my whole, and also like, some of my family has read it, but not all of my family has read it. So I'm just kind of like trying to ignore it as much as I can. I'm just like, don't think about it. Don't think about it. Don't think about it. I'm like not that nervous for like reviewers or readers or anything. I'm way more nervous for like my aunt, you know, to be like, I read this in your book. And you'd be like, oh my God, please no.
Yeah, I feel like it's like such a, like, you put yourself in a book and then having the people close to you like have an opinion because they know you, you're like, they have like, it's like so much more closer than if it was like a stranger, you're like, oh, it's a stranger. I don't give a fuck what they think.
Right, exactly. I even put at the end of the book, I put like in the acknowledgments, I like made a note for my family. I was like, if you're part of my extended family, here are things that you can talk about with me instead of this book. Like, I am not talking to you about this book. Here are some topics we can talk about the next time you see me. Do not bring up this book if you read it. Like, I don't want to know. Just, I love you. Thank you for buying it if you did. Just don't stop. No, no.
I love this. So let's chat about the book. So what is the elevator pitch? Like, what can readers expect to from your essays?
So it's a series of essays that detail how I went from being a really well-behaved, good kid, and I was trying really hard to be this good kid, into being this like chill girl who did everything for guys and was trying to get male attention all the time. And then how I kind of overhauled myself from that into slowly into what I am now, which is much more like, I don't need people to like me or approve of me all the time. I mean, I still do, but the goal is not to, you know, the goal is like, I don't need outside approval as much as my own approval of my behaviors. And so it's kind of trying to show, especially for women, but kind of for all of us, how you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, you know, you're too slutty, you're too prudish, you're whatever, all those things that are like, you can't find a good middle line. So you have to find out what your line is and what your self acceptance looks like, kind of.
And what has been in that journey? Because I've been in that journey too. I feel like it's something as you get older, it gets easier. But at the same time, there are things that we have done that has led you to that place. You know, what has been some of like, you know, aha or things that you're like, oh, I, you know, wish I could tell my younger self, like, you're going to be fine, you know? And
yeah, I feel like, so being on Twitter helped so much, weirdly enough. Like, I don't feel like people usually point to social media as like a helpful tool, but for me, seeing all the specifically women online, and honestly, like usually women of color, who've been forced into some of these positions of like saying things where everyone gets mad at them or, you know, dislikes them, or just being disliked and it not killing you, like witnessing other people be disliked and being okay with it or still moving forward with it was monumentally helpful for me. And it kind of opened my eyes to the fact of like, you're gonna piss people off. Like, you're gonna make people upset. You're going to not be beloved, you know? And like, and it's sometimes hard to let go of that, especially I think for women, because we're so taught like be a people pleaser and like do the right thing. And at least I felt like I was taught those, you know, common social constructs of like what it means to be a good girl. So watching women kind of blow that shit up online was fabulous for me. And that was like really a little bit of what I want to do with the book, or I hope to do with the book, is to not in a prescriptive way, because the book is not prescriptive. If you read it and think it's prescriptive, you're delusional, but to just kind of have another example of somebody who kind of went on that path of like letting go of needing to be liked all the time.
Yeah. And what do you wish you would tell your younger self, the good girl? Like,
I wish I would tell, God, I don't know that she'd listen. I mean, I would love to tell her like, relax, it's fine. And you're going to have sex one day. So just chill out. Can you just chill out about it? Like, please calm down. I love you, but you are making this so serious. But I think I would, I mean, this is going to just be so corny. So like, excuse me before I say it, but I honestly feel like I would love more to hear from her, because I feel like it's so hard to remember sometimes what it really felt like to be in it. And it's so hard to like think about those things. So I almost feel like I'm like, what were you like before I made all these other choices, you know? Like, what were you like when you were like a little more innocent and naive and not hardened by the world? And, you know.
Yeah, I think I can identify with that, because I realized like my younger self, like I cannot identify with a lot of things about it. Like the things and memories that are like passing by, but I'm like, as I get older, like I'm turning 40 this year. And so what was my life in my 20s were like perfectionist, like trying to be a good girl, trying to people pleasing my way through life, doing everyone's job, trying to do it all and trying not to show like I, you know, imperfections. And so it's something I cannot identify now at 40. I'm like, I made a mistake. Sorry. You know, I'll take responsibility and I'll move on, you know, like, or it's not, or my job is not my identity, or like, I don't worry about the whole food situation. I'm like, okay, I'll eat intuitively, you know, like it's not the same overstructured life that was like so like challenging at a time where it's like, now I'm like, relax about it.
Yes, it is easier as you get older. I think part of the thing that I kind of tried to get at in this book is I think it partially gets easier as you get older, because you literally just run out of energy. Like, that's kind of where the title came from, is like, it wasn't always these like conscious, like, this is my new praxis of how I deal with the world or like whatever. It wasn't these like, oh, I did work on myself necessarily. Sometimes you just are like, I'm done. I'm done. I'm over. I can't anymore. I'm exhausted. I don't like, I mean, I have dealt with like this is also again in the book. A lot of it's about my weight and my body issues and my body dysmorphia and my eating disorders that I've had and stuff. And as I've gotten older, I mean, I've talked to some people about like, hey, what are some things that have helped you? And there's definitely things that have helped, but I think at some point I got to a point where I was just so exhausted by it being the only thing I could think about. And that's not, I mean, like, that's not an answer. I'm not giving that as like a prescription to anyone. Like, I'm not saying this will fix you, but I just feel like at some point I was just kind of like, I'm going to just leave the house. And if I look ugly, I look ugly and I don't care. Like, okay. So someone thinks I'm like, that's not even my business. If someone thinks I'm ugly, that's not my business. I don't care. Who cares? We're done. Like, cause yeah. It's so exhausting. It's exhausting.
It is exhausting to think about what other people think about you and what they're thinking and the whole process. And the reality is, what I realized is like, they don't even think about you. Like, they don't give a fuck about you. They're like, whatever. Like, you show up great. If you don't show up, that's fine too. You're fat, you're fat. You're thin, you're thin. Like, it's not like they're not stressing about it. Like, you're stressing about it, like yourself, but they're not stressing about it. You're the one who's like having this rumination mind game going on.
And I think it was also huge for me to be like, even if someone does think that I'm any negative term, whether it's like body related or whether it's you're a bitch or whatever it is, then it's not just like, oh, even if they aren't thinking about it, but if they are, if we're pretending that they are thinking that, mm-hmm. Okay, so what? Mm-hmm. Okay, like, I mean, what am I going to do about that? I mean, if I'm not being harmful or like unkind or something like that, but like at some point it feels for so long in your life, at least for me, it did, like you have to be responsible for everyone's opinion of you. Mm-hmm. And you aren't. You're responsible for your actions. You're responsible for your like care of others and like those kinds of things, but you just can't carry that much stuff. That's like too big of a job.
It is too big of a job. Yeah. Yeah. I'm grateful for the age, like the time has grown, like, you know, getting closer to 40 and not thinking about it. I'm also grateful for the years in therapy that I spent, you know, the intense process of trying to deconstruct it and to realize and to the point to my therapist, it's like, you don't need to do more. You just need to do less because you're exhausted. You're burned out. You know, like, I was like, but I want, it's just like, no, do less. Like, yeah, just don't do, like, don't try to figure shit out, like, just allow yourself just to be, you know, which is, like, there's a freedom with that, there's a freedom just being, like, you know, like, it's nobody's business how I live my life, it's nobody's business how I choose to spend with, and what I'm supposed to do, and all this stuff. The only person that matters is just me, you know, yeah. And it's not selfish.
No, like, I just think, yeah, you have to get there. Like, that can't even be selfish. You have to get there to like make good moves forward, you know?
Yeah. So what's been a couple of books what kind of books do you read, by the way?
Okay. So I read, I was just listening to your podcast recently, and on your website, and I read so much romance, and I am like a massive romance reader. I read a lot of books. I also read a lot of women's memoirs and essay collections for sure, which is what led me to wanting to write my own. Then the next category, I mean, probably the biggest category numbers wise is romance. And then after that, I read some like fiction, like, you know, this is a good book kind of like, sure. But yeah. It's always like bookended by like so much like romance. So
so your policy is the way you were pitched, and this is to the audience, like I get pitched multiple people, and your policy says she'll be perfect because she reads romance. So I was like, okay.
I try to read 50 books a year, and I read like, usually I go over that. It depends, but like, that's like my minimum. And I'm not allowed to count books if I don't finish them. That's like my rule for myself.
Okay.
So I start like hundreds of books a year, but I just don't finish them. But I read like, usually in a year, I'll read at least 30 romance novels. Like, I am obsessed.
So what kind of romance do you go for? Contemporary, historical, paranormal? There's a little bit of everything. So
I am a historical fan through and through. That's my favorite genre. There's like a couple contemporaries that have kind of broken through for me, that I'm into, and I'll read it. I do find myself reading more contemporary for like male romances because there's so many more of them. But I prefer if they're like, if I could get 800 Cat Sebastian books a day, like that's like the level I need. So if I could get that, amazing. But yeah, that's like my, so I saw some stuff on your website that, again, I saw like Tessa Dare, whom I love, and Cat Sebastian, I obviously love. I mean, I read the Bridgerton series like when it came out, when I was like 12 or 13 or 14, like around there, like when, I can't remember, but I was like reading that years ago. Mm-hmm. And so then when it was being adapted, my sister and I, who she got me into romance novels because I stole her books, she and I were like texting each other, almost like mad that like our thing, like romance novels were like in the world, even though it's obviously good and exciting, but.
Yeah. It's kind of like interesting dynamic because a lot of romance that are getting adapted. And so people are discovering, quote unquote, discovering the genre. And yeah, they're like calling on it and they're like, oh, I feel so bad. It's guilty pleasure. I'm like, it's not guilty pleasure. It's just pleasure. There's nothing wrong to read romance, and it's not so brave to read a shirtless man in a cover. Like, it's healthy relationships. Like, it's teaching you, like, you know, feminism, healthy relationships, how to treat a woman, woman's pleasure. Like, there's like so much to learn from reading romance. So
100%. And I actually, like, it took me a while. It was, I talked about this on another podcast recently that was about romance, learning the tropes, which was really fun. But I was talking about this. I used to keep my romance novels, like my paperbacks, behind my other books when I was in college.
Yeah.
Partially because I lived with guys and I was like, I don't even want to begin this discussion. And they were like, almost imagine like a frat housey kind of thing. So I was like, I don't even want to start this discussion, but I used to keep them behind my other books. And then it kind of became a habit of mine where I would just like put them behind my books on the bookshelf. And then when I moved in with my boyfriend, we have like a whole wall of bookshelves. And he was like, well, why are you, no, you have to put them on display. Like, what if you have friends over that like also love romance and want to talk to you about this? And he was the one who was so encouraging. And I was like kind of nervous about it, weirdly. I mean, not weirdly. I know why I was nervous, because there's like weird misogynistic shame around it. But then finally I like put them on in the front, you know, of the front of my bookcase. And for some reason it like struck me as very funny that I was like nervous about showing guests in my house these books about like sex and love when I am literally a sex and relationships writer. Like, of all the people to not, like, everyone, I'm writing about like anal pleasure, and then I was like, oh no, not my romance novels on my bookcase. Like, it made no sense. For some reason that just always struck me as so funny that I was like, oh, I don't want anyone knowing I know about sex. I'm like, this is your job. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I think it's like, it's something to overcome, but I'm grateful that you're putting them on display and you're talking about it. You're talking about romance. And, you know, is there, in terms of historical, is there a time period or author that you're like, you know, like it's your catnip, like anything that comes up? I know Cat Sebastian is one of them, but is there any other one?
I love Stacey Reed has a lot of great romances. I think it was My Darling Duke is I think the one that I'm thinking of, that where there's a hero that was impotent, I believe. Is it in that one? I think it's that one. Okay. Yeah. It's so I read so many that I get them confused. I can't, you're so good at keeping track of that. But I loved that one because it was like, okay, we're not reading this like ultra macho-ness that we have to like it was like such a cool like turning the tropes on its head of like male prowess and stuff. So I loved that one recently. That was one that like stood out. I've read so many recently that have been great. And then I just actually started a series from Lenora Bell. I like her. I mean, I really like Regency era is generally kind of my jam. Like I feel like it's like I feel like I like the really like classic stuff of like Regency era historical stuff that's just like dukes and going to a ball and like so basic. It's, I wish it were more creative. And there's some, like, I definitely have read some stuff I definitely go further into the 1800s, like Victorian era and stuff. It does get a little bit difficult for me to do, like, I can't remember the the time period, but like French Revolution stuff. Why can't I think
of it? Oh, Georgian. I just read Eloisa James. And yeah, I don't understand the whole wigs and the dresses and the stuff. And I'm like, and the male wearing embroidery. And I'm like, I don't understand. Like, it's like, I did read the Eloisa James Wild series, which is kind of like the Kardashians set in Georgian era. It's like a Kardashian family, like really famous and stuff. And so that was like an interesting series, but it was like my first and a couple, there's a couple more that I read, but it's like, it's difficult to understand the whole wig situation. Like
I agree with you. That's, I don't know why I couldn't think of Georgian, but yes, I can't get over like their wigs. It's literally the wig part where I'm like, what are they doing right now with this like massive, like, I don't even like going out for Halloween because it's like so much effort to be dressed up that much, you know, like how are they, like, this isn't sexy. You have to take your like 3-foot wig off. Like, I don't know. So that, I feel like I've read some good ones. I think Elizabeth Hoyt often writes Georgian stuff, if I remember correctly. And so I think she's really good at that. So I have enjoyed it, but it's like the like sweet spot of like, this is so easy for me is like, just the like down the line Regency era, very classic stuff.
Yeah, I would say Lenore Bell is a good author to go down her rabbit hole. Like, she has enough books out there. There's like, you can spend a couple weeks reading them. But she does do like a lot of Dukes and a lot of Regency. And it feels like fresh, it feels modern. She has a series that's like a bachelor. Her first debut novel is like a bachelor, a Duke who's trying to figure out who could be his wife. And he invites all these marriage mark, you know, available ladies. And then he's like, this one, going on dates and trying to figure out.
I read that one, but I read it a while ago. And so now I'm just like finishing the series. Like read that, I think, like 2 years ago. So.
Yeah, you're reading the vegetarian one, or however she goes. Like she has like a weird word name. Like,
Dorothea is the one, is the main character for this one, and she's like wants to get paintings from a duke's house, and then they like go. I think they're gonna go up to Ireland together. I just started.
Yes, I saw. I read that one. There's like just one bed. You know.
Yeah. So. I love any situation where there's just one bed, that classic scenario that happens to all of us all the time. Just one bed with your crush.
You're like, what's going to happen?
Who knows? So open-ended. No one's sure.
Yeah. So the next one is the vegetarian one. She gets a third book. And then I haven't read the other series, but I read her latest series. And she wrote one that was a carpenter. Like, it's not a Duke. It's actually based on her husband. So if you wanted like a non-Duke, like working class, you know, related, she has one book for that. Love is a Rose is a book. So.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
No, I'm super excited. I have a really bad memory of who I've read before because I feel like a lot of romance novel writers' names are similar, or they sound similar to me. Like, I just, my brain is like, it's 40 women. I don't know. Like so I'm always like, looking in my Kindle being like, have I read Vivian Laurent before, or like whatever, you know, like I'm like, who, you know, so I'm always like, I spend so long looking up new authors, and when I find someone I haven't read their books yet, I am so excited. I'm like, yes, okay, cool, here we go.
Have you read Diana Quincy?
No, I don't think so. Wait,
that's a diverse one. That's Arab women. So they're all Arabs. And it's like so good. She has two books in the new series. The first one is a little angstier, but the second one is delightful. It comes out this month. The first one is Her Night with the Duke. So just one bed trope. It's a little bit, she's a writer, she's a widow. I love widow heroines. And he's supposed to marry her stepdaughter. Her stepdaughter and her are both around the same age.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's really angsty, but it's good. And then the next one is the Viscount Make Me Do It. It's a bonesetter heroine. And Viscount, who has like a little murder mystery around it, and she's trying and she fixes him. She's like, she says a bone setter. She's like, I don't want you. And so her family's Arab, and they were like, he's a Viscount, he's a Viscount. I don't know how to say it. He's one of those most of the time. And her family's like, no, we don't want you to marry an Englishman. No. And you're like, but you're supposed to, most marriage girls are like, I want to marry a Viscount. Like, you know, they're like, no. So it's actually, it's a little angsty, but it's not as angsty as the first one. But it's good diverse. It's a good diverse read.
That's amazing. I'm so excited. I cannot wait. I'm always looking for like more authors, and I have a problem. Like,
yeah.
When Kindle Unlimited came out, I was like, game over. Like,
yes. Yes. I'm like the same way. I'm like, I have like, I get so many book recommendations, and I'm like, I'm just trying to like get through them. Like, it's a lot. So, but it's great. It's great to discover new authors and discover like new to me hidden gems, like, you know, so yeah. Awesome. So tell us where you can find you online.
You can find me at mostly on Twitter at one follower, no dad, the number one, and then follower, no dad. And the story of why my Twitter handle is that is in the book, I promise. I have a dad. So at one follower, no dad. You can also find my Substack, Here's the Thing, at onefollowernodad.substack.com, I believe. And then you can find my book, Well, This Is Exhausting, either through my website, onefollowernodad.com, or on Gallery Books or Simon & Schuster. We'll have it as well.
I love this. Thank you, Sophia, for being on the show.
Thank you so much. This was wonderful.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share it with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. For book recommendations, author interview archives, and other fun book resources and tips, please visit whatyoureadingnextblog.com. The Watch Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Network. To discover new shows to listen and love, please visit frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? Watch Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadingnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.